FAA reauthorization is on the move in the U.S. Senate. Finally, American Airlines criticizes the FAA for changing rules in mid-game and observing the 50th anniversary of United Flight 736. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, April 22, 2008. Get set for a flurry of news about the user fee debate in the Senate over the next few days. It looks as if Senate Bill 1300, which would reauthorize the FAA and fund it 5 more years, may be on the move. ANN has been told Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has called for the bill, which at last check still included a $25 user fee on turbine IFR flights, to come to the floor for consideration within a week. AOPA's Chris Dancy says Reid, quote, has told Senators Rockefeller and Backus that he wants the bill to come to the floor and that they need to work out a solution that will allow that to happen, unquote. Rockefeller, with former Senator Trent Lott, had previously threatened to ban general aviation aircraft from busy airspace if some kind of user fee system didn't make it into law. If the Senate passes a bill without user fees, it will have to be reconciled with a similar bill passed by the House last year. Then, on it goes to the White House to be either signed or vetoed by a president whose administration called for user fees in the first place. In short, we're not out of the woods yet. American Airlines CEO Gerard Arpey personally apologized to the public last week for 3,300 flights canceled over MD-80 inspection issues. This week, American has come out swinging at the FAA, and in the New York Times, no less. The paper says the airline faces more groundings in coming weeks and is risking further agency ire by accusing the FAA of changing long-standing rules on how airworthiness directives are administered. Specifically, American's MD-80 lead engineer, Greg Magnuson, says the company has traditionally had the leeway to decide on its own how to resolve ambiguities or conflicts within ADs, but that's suddenly not being permitted. In one example, American Airlines officials noted that one AD involved removing and reusing a bolt and a nut clip, while the associated parts list showed a bolt and a standard nut. The airline was cited for using the nut clip. John Golia, a maintenance expert and former member of the National Transportation Safety Board, discussed with the paper the grounding of American's entire MD-80 fleet over issues related to wire bundles in main gear wells. Quote, those airplanes could have flown for the rest of their careers and those wires would not have been a problem, unquote. As more mass cancellations loom in an expanded FAA audit, U.S. Transportation Secretary Mary Peters has asked for reports from both the FAA and American about how things could have been handled differently. Monday marked the 50th anniversary of an airline accident which changed the way jets are flown in the U.S. and prompted the creation of the FAA. A United Airlines DC-7 with 47 souls on board left Los Angeles International on the morning of April 21, 1958, but never made it to Omaha, Nebraska. While flying along the Victor 8 airway near Las Vegas, the airliner was hit in midair by an F-100F Super Sabre trainer flying out of Nellis Air Force Base. A military instructor was reportedly putting his student through a spiral descent under the hood, and the fighter was moving at an estimated 500 miles per hour when it sheared off a 12-foot section of the DC-7's right wing at 21,000 feet. Both planes went down. There were no survivors. The Las Vegas Review-Journal records that it was the worst aircraft accident in Las Vegas history. In the days after the accident, two other commercial pilots came forward with accusations that U.S. Air Force planes often stunted near their aircraft along Victor 8. Things changed after the collision. The airliner had been carrying 13 key men in the top-secret ICBM project. The military decreed there would never again be that much sensitive information and that many key personnel flying on the same aircraft. Later that year, President Eisenhower signed the Federal Aviation Act, ordering the formation of the Federal Aviation Agency, later administration, through consolidation of the Civil Aeronautics Administration and the Civil Aeronautics Board. The act also demanded better communications procedures between civilian and military aircraft. Today, an exhibit inside the McCarran Terminal building at Las Vegas commemorates the accident. Several families of those lost in the collision have also asked to have a marker placed at the site where wreckage from the DC-7 landed, before that area is turned into the Southern Highlands Residential Development, which is planned. We at ANN have a personal connection to Flight 736. One of those 13 key personnel on board was Robert Darmody, who would never get to meet his grandson, who grew up to be ANN managing editor Rob Finfrock. Find a much more personal account of this story from Rob at aero-news.net. If Hollywood moguls flew their private jets over your home at all hours of the night, what would you do? It's been a growing problem for years for residents near Bob Hope Airport in Burbank, California. Now, the LA Times reports that after an 8-year, $6 million study, the airport's operator has proposed a solution. Ban all operations at Bob Hope between 10 p.m. and 6:59 a.m., which would have the effect of shifting about 16 jet flights per night to Van Nuys Airport, already the busiest general aviation airport in the world. The proposal is out for its 45-day public comment period. As you might imagine, residents near Van Nuys are not happy, and a NIMBY versus NIMBY legal battle appears imminent. The Glendale Burbank Pasadena Airport Authority, which operates Bob Hope Airport, says it's done its homework. Time will tell. The FAA says existing noise mitigation procedures are effective, and the airport has a considerable burden to prove an outright curfew is required, in addition to facing cost-benefit analysis. The authority counters that its consultants found the nighttime ban would cost commercial airlines, passengers, and cargo carriers $55 million, but save up to $67 million elsewhere, including reduced need for government-subsidized soundproofing of nearby homes. If sheer community size matters, Van Nuys may be at a disadvantage. Burbank officials say their airport has 1,545 homes situated in noisiest areas near Bob Hope, while Van Nuys has only 54 homes facing similar aircraft noise levels. Van Nuys airport officials are already considering their own new rules to offload some of their traffic. The Times reports environmental studies for that plan are expected to be released this summer. Congressman Brad Sherman, a Democrat from Sherman Oaks, may have the only idea that would satisfy homeowners near both airports. Quote, "Eventually what we need is identical curfews at both Valley airports," unquote. We should have word by the end of the year on whether the Burbank ban happens. Once the public comment period wraps up, airport officials want to get it submitted to the FAA this summer, and the agency will then have 6 months to make a decision. Up next on ANN, NTSB releases its prelim on a fatal crash near Lakeland. Boeing fights rumors of still more Dreamliner delays. And will Russian money rescue Alitalia? You're listening to Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Do you think the only time your certified airplane can be equipped with a full emergency airframe parachute recovery system is when it rolls off the production line? Well, think again. VRS is the aftermarket leader in providing full airframe recovery parachutes for certified airplanes like yours. We manufacture the reliable parachute systems you need for a full range of aircraft, including Cessna. For your own safety and for that of your family members and loved ones, get the extra life assurance of a VRS airframe recovery parachute. In the event of an emergency, you'll never question the security of having one final option. Call BRS at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for April 22, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. The National Transportation Safety Board is out with its preliminary report on the crash of a Lancair Legacy departing Lakeland Linder Regional Airport at the conclusion of Sun & Fun on April 13th. NTSB notes several witnesses saw the two-seat aircraft's forward-hinged canopy cracked open on takeoff. One witness told investigators the plane's pilot, Gerard Skolnick, appeared to be manipulating the canopy on climbout just before the crash. Whether the distraction was directly causal to the accident or if other factors were involved in the fatal crash remains to be officially determined. The NTSB should issue a final report in about a year. You can read the entire prelim at aero-news.net. Boeing made it clear when it announced the third and latest delay in development of the 787 Dreamliner that it was sandbagging, under-promising in the hopes of over-delivering. So it's probably really annoying to Team Dreamliner that rumors of yet more delays are circulating. Reuters reports a German magazine published a story on Sunday saying the FAA recently told the plane maker of an issue regarding certification, which would push back first deliveries of the 787 by another 3 to 6 months to early 2010. Boeing says the report, which appeared in Focus magazine, is false, and the FAA's Laura Brown concurs, quote, "We continue to work with Boeing on certification of the aircraft," unquote. It's official. On Monday, Air France KLM announced it has formally withdrawn its takeover bid for Alitalia after negotiations with the beleaguered Italian flag carrier fell apart over union protests. The decision comes after weeks of bickering over the future of the Italian airline. The Alitalia board had accepted a $1.17 billion takeover bid from Air France KLM last month. Painful, some said undervalued, but realistic for an airline with an obsolete fleet losing €1 million a day. Then, unions demanded the buyers commit to retaining 2,100 Alitalia workers. Air France KLM sent its negotiating team home on April 2nd and declared the deal all but dead. On the same day, Alitalia CEO Maurizio Prato suddenly resigned in frustration, reportedly calling Alitalia cursed and adding that only an exorcist could save it. Now that the Air France KLM deal is officially dead, there's a rumor that salvation may yet be at hand for Alitalia, and that it may come in a form which has saved a few small general aviation companies recently. Russian investors. Italy's Prime Minister-elect, Silvio Berlusconi, suggested Russia's Aeroflot might become a takeover bidder. The Italian government appears ready to loan Alitalia another €150 million to keep it afloat while a new buyer is sought. Flight Training Services International, or FTSI, has announced the formation of a new consulting group, Jackson Group Consultants, LLC. Jackson Group was formed to address the overwhelming growth projections in the aviation industry. Representatives with FTSI tell AeroNews that JGC will focus on performing comprehensive research and development and providing solutions based on a thorough needs assessment. Last Thursday, JGC announced its first partnership, a joint venture with Bangkok Airways, Thailand's second biggest airline. The joint venture will produce a new flight school based on the commercial airline pilot training program model and will be called Bangkok Flight Academy. Prasertong Osuth, founder and CEO of Bangkok Airways, notes, quote, "According to IATA, there's a potential need to train 17,000 pilots per year. Bangkok Flight Academy is prepared to provide solutions to this shortage and to train pilots to the highest levels of the flight training industry," unquote. Jackson Group Consultants is headquartered in Duluth, Georgia. Still ahead, safer flight through aerobatic training. BAE cuts the first metal part for the F-35 Lightning II. And Britain's Prince William lands a military chopper on his girlfriend's lawn. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, April 22, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Torgon Swiss, a fast-growing manufacturer of wristwatches for aviators, tells ANN it's launching the Torgon Academy of Flight Safety in partnership with airshow pilot Spencer Suderman and his Be a Safe Pilot training program. The Academy's curriculum will seek to increase aviation safety by teaching pilots essential recovery and survival skills not normally offered in either primary or advanced flight training. Spencer Suderman, chief flight instructor and airshow pilot, said aerobatics will be involved. Quote, "We literally turn pilots upside down in real airplanes in order to give them the confidence to fix the problem without the panic," unquote. The school is based at the Camarillo Airport in Ventura County, California, and operates year-round, flying a Pitt Special S2B high-performance biplane. In what's being called a major milestone, BAE Systems has cut metal on its first component for the F-35 Lightning II production aircraft, a component part of the aft fuselage. The first production F-35 is slated to enter service with the U.S. Air Force in 2010. The low-rate initial production contract is worth close to $50 million U.S. to BAE Systems and will fund the production of two conventional takeoff and landing variants of the aircraft. The component was cut by BAE Systems supplier Hyde at its Manchester factory. The component will move to BAE Systems' Samlesbury site in Lancashire for further manufacturing work before all parts are assembled. Final assembly of the aircraft will take place at Lockheed Martin's site in Texas. Britain's Prince William is under fire again after it was revealed he landed his Royal Air Force helicopter in girlfriend Kate Middleton's back garden earlier this month during an official military exercise. The Daily Mail of London reports Middleton and her parents watched in delight as the second in line to the throne of England practiced a series of takeoffs and landings in the paddock of their sprawling detached home in Bucklebury, Berkshire, on April 3rd. The prince apparently had permission from his supervisors, who've now been called on the carpet by the head of the RAF. Air Chief Marshal Sir Glenn Torpy is said to have erupted with rage at the sheer stupidity of the situation and is said to have demanded a line-by-line explanation from subordinates. Prince William is racking up a controversy-filled career as a pilot. He was awarded his wings by his father, Prince Charles, earlier this month. He then flew to the Isle of Wight in an RAF helicopter for a stag party. The RAF has refused requests by the Mail to confirm how much William's attachment has cost taxpayers, arguing it would take too much manpower to sit down and work the figures out. A Ministry of Defense spokesman has defended the stunt. Quote, "Battlefield helicopters routinely practice landing in fields and confined spaces away from their airfields as a vital part of their training for operations. These highly honed skills are used daily in conflict zones such as Iraq and Afghanistan," unquote. Critics say Prince William's helicopter could be used in Iraq or Afghanistan. And finally, CBS News reports the Hillary Clinton campaign has upgraded its charter plane from a Boeing 717 to a larger McDonnell Douglas MD-81. The change ups seating from 88 to 143 passengers and provides Senator Clinton her own entrance at the front of the plane as well as a private lavatory. Members of the media get a more convenient rear entrance on the MD-81, but the best part for them has to do with the new plane's background. The MD-81 was chartered from Midwest Airlines, which had it configured to carry NBA teams. The legroom is said to be excellent. One downside hasn't been pointed out yet. The MD-81 is less fuel efficient and produces more carbon than the 717. That issue may not have time to come up. Today is the Pennsylvania primary, which could spell the beginning of the end of campaigning for either Clinton or Obama. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, we'll hear about NBAA's new event focused on small aircraft operators, as announced at Lakeland by President Ed Bolin. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.